Last month when I was at the Cosmic Summit, I had the pleasure of speaking with Hugh Newman from Megalithomania for about an hour. We discussed all manner of different topics, and he just sent me the file for me to upload so you can watch the discussion that him and I had. For those of you who are unaware, this is not my home. This is somebody else's home. I broke in because I heard they had good liquor, but it's all this stuff that I can't even read the damn names of, so I just left it here and I brought a beer of my own accord, and I'll be going back to Spokane soon. All right, well, thank you very much. Enjoy the video, and we'll see you at the end.
Hey, Megalithomaniacs. We're here with the one and only Dan Richards from the Dedunking YouTube channel. And he's been doing some quite remarkable research, in my opinion, over the last year or two, where he's been debunking the debunkers, amongst other things. But one of the things Dan did that kind of impressed me was kind of back up Graham Hancock, because he gets so attacked by so many people for such bizarre reasons, including racism as one of them. And when you started doing that, I really started taking notice, because I thought, you know, I know Graham, I've known him for quite a few years, and I see that and I'm just like, my God, how can these people actually even say that? If you've actually read his books, there's not a hint of racism in them. And I've read pretty much everything he's done.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like that.
No, not at all.
I mean, so why do you think that's just such an issue?
The thing is, the people, they'll weasel out of it. So we should say that right off the bat. Those guys, I never said Graham was racist. I just said that he encourages racism. He supports racism. But the fact of the matter is that my comment section, I'm sure you're getting it frequently, my comment sections are full of people saying, you know, that Graham Hancock is a racist. He's a white supremacist. And it is an insane thing, and I think the reason that they did it is kind of transparent. If you want to bring people in to this that don't really give two shits about the pyramids, start crying racism or anything that's going to drag people in on a political level, and now you're going to get some people involved. And also, I think it's a psychological excuse, because, I mean, let's be clear, these guys spend hours and hours and hours online yelling at people that disagree with them, and I've compared it to... If your kid came to you, your 16-year-old kid, and was like, man, I love Halo, so I was just on Reddit for like 6 hours yelling at the Call of Duty guys and telling them how bad their game sucked, you'd be like, whoa, what the fuck's wrong with you? But then if the kid was like, yeah, but that's because Call of Duty's racist, at least you could understand why in his head, he's like, well, I'm going to go fight racism for 6 hours by yelling about Call. It's a very sleek way for them to lie to themselves.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
It is bizarre.
But it's quite interesting, because you actually started challenging them on this, like going into details, and it's clear that a lot of they haven't really read the books.
Nope.
Fundamentally, some of them admitted that later. But I find that frustrating, because that just shows you the kind of quality of people you're dealing with as well. And then the whole Flint Dibble debate that went crazy, everything kind of turned on its head with that. But regardless of that, you've been doing other work. You've been like visiting ancient sites. You recently went to the Sage Wall, various places, which I've not been to. I'm quite interested in that. There's a big debate about nature versus man-made.
Yep.
Maybe we could just start there. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm making a video on it here before too much longer, so I don't want to spoil a whole lot, but there is definitely a lot of natural stuff in the region that looks very much like the Sage Wall. The only difference is the straightness and the size. The rest, as a matter of fact, from Sage Wall itself, there's a point, because you could look down this mountainside, there's a point where you can see another ridge that's almost, it's not quite as straight, but it's pretty similar, and it's about 2 miles away or so from there.
Okay.
Devil's Playground Giant's Playground is an area right there that is full of the same kind of megalithic rock structures that are clearly natural. And you can even see in places where dolmens have formed, where you could see these rocks were just kind of jumbled up over here, and then this big rock eventually got the rain, made it kind of Swiss, kind of bread sliced it, and then one piece fell off the end. A lot of places you can suss how things went down, and then there are places where you look at it and you're like, I don't see how the rock got on top of that one, unless a person was involved. So the whole area is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of your photos. I've seen previous photos. I mean, that dolmen thing, super tall.
Yes.
With a kind of capstone. it's just like, what the hell? It's like someone's built that. But then I've spoken to geologists, and they say, well, actually, that whole area, if you start scanning the mountains, you see things a bit like that.
Yeah.
But that one is quite a bit. That one looks a little bit different.
Yeah. You know? The lack of a. There's nothing around it to have fallen on it,
I asked Michael Collins this, Wandering Wolf, about if there's any points or arrowheads or small artifacts, you know, weapons or anything have been found there. I mean, did you come across anything?
No, I didn't come across anything.
I mean, has anyone?
Not that I'm aware of.
Because that would tell you if someone was there.
Yes.
You know.
That's kind of a problem with a lot of the sites in the West, is it can be very difficult to get artifacts from, because it was okay to just grab the things and put them in a shoebox for so long. Like, there's a place that I visited, Lake Lenoir Caves in Washington. It's part of, right on the channeled scab lands part, right next to where Randall, it's less than 10 miles from Dry Falls, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
So, but the Lake Lenoir Caves were documented with having a bunch of pounding stones, and they found it, a bunch of stones for processing foodstuffs and whatnot. And there's not a single thing to be found there now. And nobody knows where these artifacts are now. They're just the stuff that the locals will tell you. There's not even an academic source for any of that. It's just the locals. Yeah, my great-grandpa found arrowheads there. My great-great-grandpa found, but it's all gone now. And the Lake Lenoir Caves is a rockier area, but it's the same kind of thing. When you have people that go to those areas consistently that are out there enjoying nature and checking everything out, a lot of times their eyes do go to the ground and they look for those things. And for over 100 years, people just grab them and walk away. So it will take a real archaeology, like actual hashtag real archaeology, to get out there and dig a big old hole in the ground sift some sand and, you know, to determine. But we do know that there were people in the region, that's not a stretch. It's just whether or not these different sites were used by humans or whether they were.
Yeah, I think I've got to get out there at some point. It keeps coming up.
It's great.
It's intriguing. It's a bizarre looking place.
It's such a great part of the country too. It's so. You know, your cell phone ain't going to work most of the time, but I'm a pretty skeptical person, but I do get pains in my elbow a lot from carrying shit and stuff, and I left there after a few days in Montana. I just felt good. My arm didn't hurt, okay. And I drove 6 hours there and 6 hours back, and I just felt better for a few days. But there's no even planes that fly over for the most part. The sky is just blue. It is beautiful.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Because one of the things I'm intrigued by, you've been doing quite a bit on archaeoastronomy.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by the whole subject. I did the whole thing on the solstice here at the Cosmic Summit. That kind of, you know, especially fascinated me since we discovered this Karahan Tepe thing. And you've now kind of, I just want to get maybe just a brief opinion on the Karahan Tepe illumination of the head. I mean, I don't know if you've seen much about that. And it's comes through this tiny gap at this sharp angle and only works on those few days. And that really kind of got me. I mean, because it fits in with loads of other cultures, you know, the way they have blades of light marking calendrical things.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, do you think, you know, do you really believe that the Tastepla people had this level of knowledge?
Oh, absolutely, in my opinion. I think, personally, I think that... I'll preface it with this. There are species of spiders that navigate by stars. Species of spider that navigate by star.
What?
Yeah. You can look into that if you don't believe me there at home. But the idea that, you know, humans 100,000 years ago weren't using the stars is stupid. And the idea that we just like started picking this up is ridiculous. And if we assume that these people were seafaring at any point in their history, or that they inherited skills from a seafaring culture, the level of astronomy is going to be much higher, because it's one thing to use the astronomy to tell the time for mundane reasons. It's another thing altogether to use it to navigate, to use it to predict crops and herds and stuff. And so the guys that were like, I can't find my way home if I don't know where the stars are, those guys are the guys that are going to have the good astronomy. And historically, better astronomy usually results in the displacement of the old religion with the one that brings a better astronomy. This has happened hundreds of times in human history.
Yeah, I mean, and on the subject of the whole Tastepla stuff, I mean, there's been, I was there recently, just in May, and we know Jimmy Corsetti very well. Yeah. He's been out there, he's been like researching and looking at the olive tree issue. They've all been removed now.
Which is,
I couldn't believe
good
it.
Good on Jim.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was there, I've been going there for like a decade, and like suddenly there's no olive trees, and suddenly you see all this ground, and you can see it's all rubble. You can see it's all filled in material. This is not ground. This is not ground level. And it just hit me when I went there. It's like, oh my God, they've got to excavate this now. There's no other option. They have to do it.
You hope so.
And that really impressed me, the way he's a bit intense, when he kind of pushes against the archaeologists, they get a bit upset. But he kind of just, he doesn't quit.
Yeah.
That's what I like about him. He doesn't quit.
Yeah, I like Jim quite a bit.
And he kind of got in there, and it kind of like, oh, this is like, so I was actually supporting him and helping him any way I could, because I felt it needed addressing, because it seems like the archaeologists there are just, mundanely getting on with stuff, very slowly, claiming they're not going to excavate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly his campaign seems to have changed things. Now they say they're going to excavate some of it.
It's become, the archaeologists here in the West aren't really recognizing it as well as it seems like the archaeologists in Turkey. They've got their finger on the pulse enough. They see which way the wind's blowing. And, the ones we got over here, they're just kind of, we're right. It's like, okay, well, the rest of the world is kind of, you're proving to the rest of the world that you're not so right, that you're, the way that they changed their positions on the trees, I felt inclined to make a video, because when Jimmy started yelling about the trees, the narrative that was coming from these guys was, oh, those trees, those were put there to stop the erosion on the hill that didn't erode the site away for 12,000 years. We need to stop the erosion. So this is site management. You guys don't know what you're talking about. So I go look into it, and it turns out not only is it not site management, it was planted by the property owner, because the Turkish government's coming to buy it, and it's like, well, desert land's worth X, desert land with trees on it's worth Y. I want Y. So he sold it for more money that way, but then that the soil management's bullshit, as is the the trees are extremely damaging to archaeological sites, not just the foundations and stuff. A lot of they punch holes through that stratigraphy, and they introduce things into different layers that shouldn't be. Like, for example, in the United Kingdom, there's a snail that is used. I can't remember the species, but this snail is used to determine, and I think it's like 1,400 years ago that this snail was introduced into the United Kingdom. So anything before that won't have that snail, and if they're trying to date an area, they'll look, if they find that snail, okay. Anywhere where tree roots exist, that snail will go down further than it's supposed to. So it ruins their stratigraphy, their ability to use this tool. So there's a lot of just different little stupid reasons that they argued it tooth and nail. Then Lee Clair says, all right, man, we're going to take those trees out. We're going to, and then all of a sudden, oh, they were always going to do that. They've been talking about that for years, man. What's wrong with you guys? What, Jimmy didn't do anything. Jimmy who? Lee Clair doesn't know who Jimmy is.
The other thing on Göbekli Tepe, I know you're interested in, is the Martin Sweatman work on the lunisolar calendar. Because he's also applied that to Karahan Tepe.
Yes,
well,
he has.
The same bit where the winter solstice alignment occurs. It's almost like supposed to be there. I mean, he didn't even know about a winter solstice thing. And he developed this calendar based upon the stone head and the pillars. And with the starting point unclear, and then suddenly it's like, oh, well, obviously it's going to start on the winter solstice, because that's when the head gets lit up. And so I've been in contact, I've been in discussions with him about that, because we think there could be a strong contender. It backs up his work, and it backs up our work. So we're like, oh, wow. But his Pillar 43 stuff is absolutely mind-blowing. It's really intriguing. And the thing I like about him, he spent 2 or 3 years working on that article, working on that paper, got it thoroughly peer-reviewed, not from the archaeologists at Göbekli Tepe, and they complained about it, but got it peer-reviewed, published in a scientific journal. And so really, until proven otherwise, it's a fact that there are astronomical and possibly astrological parts of Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe, which is like big news, and it was big news. It went crazy. But since then, there was a backlash against it, as you know. Both Neshmi Karal, the head excavator of Karahan Tepe, and Lee Clair, both put it out there. No, they had roofs. There couldn't have been any astronomy at all, even though there's clear symbolism everywhere. And they even kind of deny that there's anything to do with astronomy there.
Which is so wild to me.
It's so weird. And it's like, even the paper that he published, Lee Clair, on the kind of, the sort of the leaders of Göbekli Tepe, he absolutely said, Nothing in there mentioned anything about the hunter-gatherer data on the way they follow the solstices and the stars. And so they're kind of dismissing it from their own academic writings based upon a roof where there's no evidence ever existed. And so Martin Sweatman has kind of like went boom, and because it's peer-reviewed scientific paper, it's like pushed it all open again. But I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, what do you, the way, because to me, Martin Sweatman, he's a scientist. Yeah. He's not an archaeologist, but he's a scientist. He knows how to do things properly.
Not only that, archaeoastronomy, you know who Sir Alexander Thom was?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Of course, I figured you did. I was pretty sure you mentioned him in your presentation yesterday, because we talked about the megalithic yard and stuff. But he was an engineer. He was a numbers guy. If you look at, there's a paper that I use frequently when I talk about the temples on Malta. It's about, I think it's 1992. They found that it wasn't Sirius that they found, but they found those temples were aligned to Crux, the Southern Cross. Now, they determined this with a team of an astronomer, an archaeologist, and a number cruncher. This is always part of the equation. There's two kinds of archaeoastronomy. They call it the Old World and New World, basically. And the New World astronomy, archaeoastronomy, generally speaking, we don't know much about the mythology of the Old World. We usually do. But the Old World archaeoastronomy will follow the New World methodology if it lacks that knowledge, which we lack at Göbekli Tepe or Karan Tepe. So you use mathematics to extrapolate, to eliminate chance as much as possible. So this is where a guy like Martin Sweatman, David Miano from World of Antiquity, in my mind, famously blasted him for being a math. Well, this guy's not even, he's not even belong in this. He's just a chemistry guy. He doesn't.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he's a number cruncher. He deals in probabilities and things like this. This is exactly, traditionally, exactly the kind of person they brought to bear on this. So right off the bat, that argument that you'll frequently hear that he doesn't belong there is bullshit. Furthermore, it's extremely intriguing because the ancients, like I said, even the spiders used the dang stars. The ancients used the stars for so many things. And like, I'm not a believer in astrology, but I personally am of the belief that the reason that the astrology belief today harkens back to the time when there was the one guy that said, 2 days we're going to need to plant the crops, and 5 days the buffalo are going to be back. He could predict the future using the stars. This is important stuff, and to just assume that the ancients, there is no, in my mind, there is absolutely no way that people started stacking rocks before they started marveling at the sky. You would spend all day long protecting your family, protecting your children, feeding your stuff, taking care of your hearth, and then at night you would watch the only show there was to watch.
Exactly, yeah.
And so, I think it's hubris, and a lot of it is because archaeologists are 180 degrees looking the opposite direction. Their nose is in the dirt, and This is all in the heavens.
Yeah, I mean, the most unscientific thing of that, the whole Göbekli Tepe thing relating to the stars, not relating to the stars, is that there's no evidence for any roofs over the main enclosures.
Yeah, they just postulate that.
Yeah, they found two negatives of poles, which are only about 2 meters long.
And they're extrapolated from that and assumed, yes.
Assumed. So what that is, though, I mean, they've excavated a lot of debris out the way. And no other negatives have been found. Just these two negatives, about 2 meters long, that doesn't equate to a huge roof. And so and there's literally no evidence because there's nothing left of it. Right. It's just possible, you know, could have been like a dead snake or stiff. Who knows? You know, it could have been anything.
Place to hang your socks.
But they put that out now on Wikipedia, in every possible article, news report, update, everything, and they keep repeating it, and then they got painted pictures of it up in the visitor center in Göbekli Tepe. So this is what bugs me. I mean, I'm not an archaeologist, I'm not a scientist, but just an observer, you can see there's something fundamentally wrong with that. Because now, because of this assumption, there's no astronomy at play in the entire region ever.
Yeah.
And it's written out of all the literature and dismissed and ridiculed.
Sadly, pretty common.
And it's just, but you know, the fact that it's not based on anything proven or scientific. I mean, I think there's a lot of, that's a good, to me, that's a representation of a lot of what is going on. We can't speculate, but they can speculate. and put it out as fact.
They're allowed to speculate all they want.
Yeah, and they put it out as fact. It goes on Wikipedia. And so that really bugs me. I mean, there's many examples you've touched on over the years where that kind of thing's been happening. But is there anything that you've been focusing on recently which has kind of really grabbed your attention?
So I've been we're going through Zahi Hawass's Joe Rogan appearance, as painful as it is. I mean, we all know that a lot of what he said was just stupid, but it really needs hammered at. And apparently the archaeologists aren't going to do it. And so even though all the scientists are like, oh, we fact check our own, and I've seen them complain. The majority of the complaints that I have seen have been about Zahi saying that he discovered everything and basically not giving his colleagues enough credit. They're not complaining about him saying that he doesn't believe in carbon dating. So I've been working on this a bit. Like, the next video on that will be about the 30,000 year Keen's List and going back to the followers of Horus, Shemshuhor, and all that. Because apparently, you know, if the number one Egyptologist in the world doesn't know it, I assume that some of my followers might not too.
I know, but he said basically, like, he didn't know what Zep Tepe was.
Yeah, he doesn't know what Zep Tepe
is. I'm like, is that, hang on a second, have I just. How could he? I know about that. He's the top Egyptologist on the planet.
It's insane. And what's a cute little fact about that too is that Zep Tepe used to have its own Wikipedia entry. Zep Tepe,
yes.
But now it's rolled into the Egyptian mythology page, and that's happened since Zahi Hawass's little shenanigans.
Seriously.
And in addition to that, when I mentioned this on Twitter, we've been talking about doing that for years. Just like the trees. Well, that's once again uncanny timing. It's like you guys think that we're like you're fucking like stupid kids. And I'm like, no, Timmy, I know that you stole the cookie out of the cookie jar, you fucking idiot. Yeah. And it's like that you just feel like you have to admonish these guys like they're kids. It's like, this is so transparently stupid.
It's becoming. I think the internet has like really kind of changed things in the way you know. You can call these people out now,
yeah,
quite effectively. And then you got people like the big podcast. You got Joe Rogan who called them out as well. He just speaks what he thinks. He doesn't care about any ramifications. And that is, I think, it's refreshing for a lot of people, especially as most people go to these podcasts and to YouTube for their real information about ancient history nowadays. They don't really rely on textbooks written by Zahi Hawass, although he claims everything in his book is the only truth there is, of course.
$88? How much the truth? $88.
That's what really gets me. I mean, I met him once, actually, at breakfast in a hotel. It was kind of bizarre. But anyway, I was talking, I mean, I'm sure you've spoken to them, the Sarscan guys, you know, Filippo and Armando, and there's another chap who's involved as well, but he's not around here. They came in, I did quite a long interview with them, and explained it all in detail, more so than in the lecture. And it kind of really, I'm quite compelled by that. I've got quite a kind of feeling there's something going on there. Do you have any initial thoughts about that?
I've looked into it a bit. I think that there's something there. I don't think that, like, the way that they're doing is they're using AI, right? Synthetic aperture radar. They'll fly over the site. Data is already there. They've flown over the sites numerous times, and so they'll take topographical changes in the surface up to 2 centimeters. They can detect from the space with the stuff as it currently is, and then they look at the changes that have happened in it and use AI to extrapolate. Like, if you imagine, just to really dumb it down, if you had like a tunnel going under a piece of bedrock and you had an earthquake, the particles on top of the bedrock would shift differently where it was solid rock than over where it was a tunnel. So they're using AI to try to put all this together. I think that this is why, personally, I think the Five Kings Chambers is AI giving it an extra finger or something kind of thing. I think that we're going to get a lot of these weird-ass artifacts like we have with AI. But I also think that the outright knee-jerk dismissal by people that are like, well, that's not how SAR stuff works, is about, in my mind, the same as somebody standing there looking at a jet engine in 1942 going, that's not how airplanes work. It's like, well, okay, but that is how they work now, brah. Sorry. And if this hadn't been Egypt, we wouldn't have got the knee-jerk reaction we did from people like Flint and other people like that. But as it is, being pyramids, we can expect anything and everything that gets, you know, that says that. It was very funny to me because Christopher Dunn actually had one of the smartest takes on this that I've seen anybody have. And he's a horrible woo peddler. He's an OG pyramidian. But he's like, you know, I really want this to be true. This is exactly what I would expect to find. So
I'm going to put a pin in this and be really skeptical because this sounds a little bit too good to be true, but I can't disregard the scan data. And so that's I tend to agree with him a lot on that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fascinating to me because, I mean, this SARS stuff was used by my good friend Andrew Collins
in
2008 when he was looking for the extension of the Tomb of the Birds or the NC2 cave on the Giza Plateau. And he was using that technology back then. So it's been around. It's just been adapted and expanded upon. I didn't realize that they need almost like supercomputers to run the data.
Oh, yeah,
that's why
yeah.
it's taking so long to do everything.
Yeah,
and they have to double check it, triple check it, and do all this. So it's quite kind of... I was surprised how technical it was.
Yeah, it was pretty complicated stuff.
It's not just, you know, because there's been other kind of scan type technologies which have been introduced here and there over the last couple of decades, and they're just very vague. Nothing really occurred from them, but this one seems to kind of hit a nerve. It's kind of hit something, and especially with all the previous stuff they were doing, like the bridges, the different structures and everything else before they even looked at the Giza Plateau to check it possibly could work. So that really got me. I mean, there's just so much going on in that kind of part of the world with that. And even Trevor Grassi, I was talking to him, and he's sort of been going down into these shafts. So they've now looked at all the shafts on the Giza Plateau and found all them. They've kind of backed all that up, even one under the Sphinx, which is utterly mind-blowing. Wow. But there's I'm just kind of...
No, that's wow.
Yeah, pretty blown away by all that. Yeah,
it's kind of a... if this technology, if they are able to make it viable and known to work and consistently work, it's going to be a game changer across the board. It's going to change. Militaries are going to shit their pants, first of all. That's going to be, it don't matter where you put them ICBMs, buddy, we see them now. All of the what's in the Grand Canyon, you're going to tell me I can't go to that part of the Grand Canyon? Fuck you, I'm going to the Grand Canyon. You hide me Chinese pyramids from us? Oh, fuck you, I'm taking pictures of your Chinese pyramids. So there's that, but then this is also like just the sheer financial weight of it. It's like, imagine the amount of work that a mining company puts into flying drones over an area doing LIDAR and surface, or on Ancient Apocalypse Season 2, you see a part where there's all these LIDAR drones being sent out into the South American rainforest. Yeah. I mean, just five archaeologists with their people to help them, and then some LIDAR drones and stuff, or buy the data from the satellites that's already been flown over. It's like, wow. And that at that point, if you get conspiratorial, you're like, okay, the governments ain't going to like this, right? So they can't shoot down the satellites because we already got the data. So even if you blast all the satellites, put us back in Stone Age, data still exists. But if you have access to that data, again, they go by dates. So it's like, okay, this day this happened, and this day this happened, this day this happened, feed all that to the computer and blah. Just so if you just go in there and kind of shuffle the dates around a little bit, now this data, this whole technique won't work anymore, and as long as you put the right timestamps on it. So it will be possible for them to short-circuit this still, but then when you got those goofballs on 4chan and shit, they'll just like sit there and stare at the computer all day. So if we sicked them on that, they'd probably make sure that didn't happen.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So while we're in Egypt, there's... first of all, we had the vases, or the vases, the beautifully... Stone pots. Yeah, yeah. And I've seen them. I didn't see them here, but I went to Matt's. I saw them all. I was like, oh wow.
Oh yeah.
That kind of really, really got me because they were just like, this is quite remote, beautiful. And I've seen a few museums here and there as well. But the technology of that, there's been a big debate about that. I know we know our friend Ben Van Kirkwick's working on it, Matt and a few others, Adam Young and others. But there's you showed me something when we were chilling out about the smooth granite kind of surfaces.
Stone lapping, yes.
Yeah, and that really caught my attention because that isn't public knowledge. That is not really well known.
No, it's not well known. It should be, but it's just not. It's stone lapping is you take two pieces of stone, and it works really well with things like granite. And they put a quartz and then some water, and then they just rub the stones together, and they do this for a really long time, and eventually... if you go to a machine shop, they have a precision granite countertop in almost every one of them, and that's how they made it. And if you actually send it in to get repaired, that's what they're going to do to repair it. They'll just sand it back down with another. It's called stone lapping. Y'all can look it up on the internet. It's all over the place. But this is a technique that will explain like precision, mirror polished surfaces, and it also...
It's why a lot of those archaeologists say that, well, you know, they just took some sand to make these faces because they're assuming that they're just measured to shit. And you could hypothetically spin one and then use just this, the same technology, the same technique, put a piece of wood with some grit in there and it just slowly, right? But that wouldn't account for the precision that we see clearly. But yeah, it's the kind of thing that's definitely a game changer as far as like when you look at ancient stonework. I felt bad. Your friend Greg said immediately, he was just like, oh man, you ruined my weekend. I was like, damn it, sorry, man. I wasn't trying to ruin your weekend, bro. It is important to take into account, though. I like to quote AJ from the Y-Files when I talk about that one. It's like he says that if we can debunk 95% of things, it's not trying to debunk your favorite thing. It's trying to make that other 5% that much cooler. Because it really is, if you've actually tried to solve these things meticulously, the ones that can't be solved actually can't be solved. It's not just, man, I think that was really cool. Because there's a lot of things like that. The pointing machine is another one where they were able to, did I show you that one yesterday as well?
No.
Okay, the pointing machine is a technique where they would use to reproduce Greek statues. The Romans did it. And you still take the skilled sculptor, but it's basically a three-point measuring thing, and they'll just take it repeatedly and move it back and forth from one thing to another until they've carved it exactly how they want it. And this is a very low-tech solution to why all the Egyptian faces are symmetrical and look the same, because you're just scaling the same thing up and down. But it's not to say that that's not... These are techniques that are... This, one of the things that's really funny about this, people are like, oh, it's low-tech thing. Oh, it's so terrible. It's like, well, these are techniques that the Romans didn't... Their pointing machine was pretty piss poor. The ones the Egyptians used were had to be pretty... About the ones that were on par with the Renaissance. So it's like the same thing. Even if you take the position of they could make those vases with a primitive lathe, the primitive lathe isn't supposed to have been in Egypt until 1600 BC. And so you talk on pre-dynastic times, you're pushing it back at least another 1500 years or so. So all of a sudden this is, even if none of the woo stuff is right, it's still, this is actually kicking the ball down the court. This is actually changing. And hilariously, Ben told me, he's like, yeah, all these guys, they've moved the goalposts. Now it's like, yeah, they had a primitive lathe back then. And it's like, they will never in a million years give any of you all the credit. Going to get credit for that. They came up with it.
Exactly. That's another thing, isn't it? Like, credit where it's due, which doesn't really damn well happen.
Thank you.
And I think that's one of the issues with, like, coming back to Karahan Tepe. Firstly, we've discovered this winter solstice thing. It's pretty solid. It's like millions to one chance of it being coincidence. And yet, no way are they ever going to accept it because they didn't discover it. So it's going to be pushed away. And also, while we're on Karahan Tepe, on the same subject of those vases, there's beautiful stone plates have been found there, hundreds of them now. And they are amazing. I mean, they're 9,400 BC. They're not the level of the kind of vases or anything, or vases, but they were doing it back then, for sure. They were doing something very accurately, very beautifully back then. I mean, you can see that on some of the pillars, the intricate stonework, how exceptional it was. So the idea of working with very hard stone goes back at least to the end of the last ice age, which is pretty impressive.
I've said this before, so forgive people who've seen me before, but if you look at human evolution and hominid evolution, stone was the premier weapon building material, the premier building material, it and wood, but stone was the good one for literally millions of years. So if you think about a father teaching his son this digital subtle techniques, and we learn these for millions of years, and then you get to a point where all of a sudden we're working bronze now, we're working copper, and the copper is just easier to work, it's faster, and I get something that's sharper, and it's a little bit more durable. It doesn't take long. How much do you know about horseback riding compared to your great-great-grandfather? Fuck all?
Yeah.
Me too. Okay. So this is what I mean. It, really quickly, all of this 2 million years of knowledge gets lost. And an example I use of this frequently is in World War II, all of the American sniper schools were impromptu. They were set up spur of the moment, and they were the first things that got shut down when the belt started tightening at the end of the war. Come Vietnam, 20 years later, a couple years in, and the people, the brass are begging for snipers that are trained. The United States Army had to go to their marksman, their Olympic marksman team to train their snipers because they had none left. These guys had better tools, were getting worse results because the knowledge has been, in one generation, gone. So it's, in my mind, I think that there's, I think that these guys were, I honestly believe that if we watched them build the pyramids, I think it would be less of a, oh my God, than a, really? Oh my God. You're kidding me. That's how we... I honestly think it would be something that simple where we did just like something. It's like, yeah, just my great-great-grandpa showed me that.
Yeah, I know. I can see that as well. So let's finish up on something quite interesting we were briefly discussing the other day, terrazzo, which is this kind of lime mortar cement, which was originally thought to be kind of developed or invented by the Romans, but since then it's been found at many of these sites in southeast Turkey, going back at least until 9600 BC, because it's at Göbekli Tepe. Yeah. There's possible evidence it's even older than that, because some of the sites they're now finding evidence of it go back at least a few hundred years before that. So that is a technology. That is like a kind of innovation where they were heating up to something like 850 degrees, which at the time they weren't supposed to be doing anything like that. So, I mean, what's your take on the whole terrazzo thing? And we can then briefly mention, is it a geopolymer or not?
Well, the idea that, I've always found the idea that they couldn't get things to like a little bit hot. 800 degrees is hot, but it's not insanely hot. It's not melting iron hot. I've always found that kind of stuff a little bit funny because, like, I don't know if you've ever seen a rocket stove, for example, right? Where it's just a tube like this, and you can make your that shit work. And these guys, they dealt with the natural world. They played with these kinds of things, and things like fire were going to be. I have a very difficult time believing that they weren't able to generate a lot of heat a lot more easily than these guys give them credit for. There's a good possibility this stuff was passed around. I'm a big proponent of like the Polynesian, that there was a bunch of people running around in boats back in before the Ice Age, and that these guys they were advanced compared to their contemporaries or compared to what we would expect. And I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if those guys were wielding these kind of thing, and that we would find that all across the world, all across the ancient world. It's funny to me the way that they get these kinds of things get handled, because they want to reject, even though we know the Romans had that stuff, they want to reject this stuff out of hand, even though it is really low tech. I mean, when it really comes down to it, this is really low tech. But it's funny that on the one hand, they say these guys were just as smart as us, and then on the other hand, they'll be like, well, they're too stupid to figure out how to make fire hot.
There is that. And then that's that kind of thing about the whole geopolymer thing, which is getting a kind of comeback at the moment, thanks to, I think, what was it, Marcel Fotti?
Yeah, Marcel Fotti. Yeah.
And I haven't read the book yet, but I'm going to get a copy and have a look just out of interest. But that's kind of a thing as well. I mean, people are kind of comparing terrazzo to that, which I don't think is really the same thing.
I'm not a huge fan of Marcel's work because of the things that he says things that are demonstrably false. And I don't mean like, I disagree with you on this. Things like the salt around the Salt Lake isn't salt, it's natron. It's like, well, no, 5% of it's natron. The other 95% are salt. Ask the fucking Mormons. They've been selling it to us for 200 years. It's that kind of stuff. He'll talk about how this can't detect that. And it's I don't want to bash the guy too hard, but I have a hard time trusting his work very well. So, I am into the possibility of geopolymers. Another reason is, like, he believes the Barbar Caves were geopolymer. He believes the Great Pyramid is geopolymer. Every vase is a geopolymer. No, clearly not. So at that point, one-size-fits-all solutions are never accurate. But geopolymers in and of themselves, there are, from what I understand, there are places in South America, like Pumapunku, where they have been, there's some scientists that have said that there's signs of geopolymer there. And again, you know, we know that the Romans were working with concrete. We know that the ancients messed around with this kind of stuff. I don't think they were making synthetic stone, but I could absolutely see them making things that we might mistake for stone, like a big concrete block, right? And I think that disregarding that out the gate, again, these are low-tech solutions. we've got mysteries here. We've got real mysteries here. And this is, I think this will piss me off about archaeologists to the bitter end. We have real mysteries here. And clearly the way any sensible person would solve that, if you put the vase way up here and you say, this is ancient high technology, you start here with rubbing sand and rock. And you work your way up to, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. Eventually you're like, okay, space lasers. Fucking I don't know what else, right? You got to get there, though. And so a lot of these guys, they jump right past it. And because of that, a lot of these archaeologists don't even start. It's like, well, we're not going to address, there's no mystery. It's like, well, okay, if you don't address the mystery, the other guy's not going to start at the bottom. He's going to start where the fuck he wants on that list. And then you're going to turn around and say, oh, you guys are a bunch of idiots who believe in ancient high technology. It's like, there's a fucking mystery here. Could you help us solve it with all those credentials and all that money that our tax dollars? Nah, I'm too busy yelling at you on the Twitter.
I know. I mean, that's become a kind of part of the job now, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yes. It's like, you know. His freaking bio has made 433 tweets against Graham Hancock since 2008. It's like one of his credentials.
That's quite concerning, to say the least. But anyway, yeah, well, I mean, we'll wrap it up now.
Okay.
Thank you, Dan.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this has been great, man. It was really good to meet you in person. Yeah, this is awesome. Yeah,
for sure. I really appreciate it. I mean, just going to let people know on the Megalithomania channel, check out Dedunking.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the discussion that we had. And for those of you who are already typing in the comment section, spiders don't navigate with stars, I Googled it. Scroll down past the AI summary of boneheads. There's papers that tell you all about it, that this is a well-documented fact. And it's not just spiders. Dung beetles do it too. Here's a secret. Let me tell you something you really need to know. Don't fucking trust AI as your only source in a search. Have a good day.